when you feel that excitement, you think you must be going down the right track. I think if it gives you that buzz, then I think I'm doing it right.
Hi, I'm Bob Acton, and I'm pleased to share my conversation with the award-winning sculptor Craig Underhill. Craig was born in Scotland and studied at Harrow College of Higher Education, Portsmouth Polytechnic, and then at the University of Eastern Illinois in the United States. He is an award-winning ceramicist, and since relocating to West Cornwall in 2020, he continues to explore and discover the dramas and the beauty of the coastline as inspiration for his distinctive, painterly, playful, and elemental hand-built ceramic forms. He uses a variety of mark-making, layering, and glazing techniques that evoke a sense of place, which we discussed during our conversation. I hope you enjoy this episode, and you can find out more about Craig in the show notes.
Welcome to Color and Ceramics, the podcast for ceramic artists who want valuable ideas about using color from leading artists and world-class experts. Here's your host, Bob Acton, a sculptor and ceramic artist who's fascinated with color and how potters, sculptors, and artists use color in their work. Tune in as he talks with his guests about color, techniques, and the impact of color on people and art itself.
Craig, thank you very much for joining us here on the Color and Ceramics podcast. We're super excited you're here.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks for inviting me. I'm looking forward to our talk.
Absolutely. It's going to be great, I think, because, of course, I love your work and I love color, and you really use color a lot in your work. And not only color, but I really like your use of texture and different ways to finish your pieces. And so we'll learn a lot about all of those sorts of things here today. So super glad we can have this conversation.
Great. Yeah, I quite enjoy talking about my work, so I'm quite looking forward to it.
That's perfect then. I know that you've been doing this for a while, so I wondered if you could share with the audience a little bit about your journey, like what got you here today?
Gosh, it started several decades ago. I went to university when I was quite young and studied ceramics. I mean, I was in my very early 20s. In fact, I was probably still a teenager when I was at university. And then having left university, there was a period where I was trying to do my work, but I was also trying to earn a living, and things were very slow, probably for about 10 or 12 years, until gradually opportunities started coming up, and I was making my work more and more. I had a better setup. And I suppose teaching has been a big part of what I've done as well. I only do my own workshops now, but I did teach in a college for quite a while, and that helped financially. But now I'm sort of relying on the income from making my work. And it's been, it is my life now. It's a really important part of me and my identity. I hate to imagine not being able to do it.
Yes, absolutely. So I think it's awesome that you're able to earn a full-time living being a ceramic artist. That is great.
Yeah, it's not easy. It's and funnily enough, I was just thinking this morning that there's not a lot of difference between succeeding and not succeeding. I think there are very good people that maybe don't manage to do that. And I feel, I suppose I've only been able to do it because I've worked at it for quite a long time.
But I suppose, though, you could work at it in the wrong way and still be unsuccessful. So what is it, do you think, that helps people be successful?
I think it's quite interesting when you get a bit older, you can reflect on that. And I think it's a blind determination. and also a little bit, I was talking to somebody else about this a while ago, and I feel I've got this high sense of responsibility. So when I went to university to do ceramics, I felt at that point I was almost saying, I'm going to be a ceramic artist. Now, it took a long time to get there, but I felt I almost had a responsibility to do that. And I stuck with it. And there were lots of occasions where I could have given up or maybe even become a painter or done something else in creative arts. But I just felt I had to stick with it. That in my mind, I'd got set that that's what I was going to do. So I thought I better get up with it and do it.
Yeah, I can see that. I was talking with somebody the other day who has gone into creating a studio where he rents out space to other people. And then that has consumed his energy and his creative mind. And so he's not doing so much work anymore in the studio. He's, I guess, being a manager of an estate or a building, right? So yeah. I see what you mean by those moments.
Yeah, well, and I, as I said, I did a lot of teaching in a college, and that was that became really quite difficult to do both well, because my work opportunities for making my ceramic work were coming along, and I felt I was having to say no or put them on hold because I was involved with teaching. And when I was teaching, there was a high standard that was expected. So I felt I was trying to do two jobs, really well, but that was very demanding. And in the end, I decided I need to give up my teaching in order to pursue becoming a ceramic artist and just do this, just do one thing well rather than trying to do two things well.
Mm-hmm. And I know many of the pieces that you make are 3D and, sit on the table like a vase or those kinds of things. And I also know that you do some painting. Do you make ceramic pieces that hang on the wall like a painting?
I do make ceramic pieces that hang on my wall. And I know it's a visual thing, this, but there's a few behind me up there. But yes. I don't make many of those. I do paint and I do make 3D. And most of what I do creatively is making 3D ceramic forms. And then they're pretty much always vessel forms, but not functional. And I see them really as being paintings made in 3D. That's how I go about thinking about them, how I go about doing them. It's a very painterly approach.
Right. So that the clay itself becomes the canvas in lots of ways.
Yeah. And I do paint, and I've painted on canvas, I paint on board, but I always come back to ceramic materials because they've got such a richness that I feel I can't really get with paint. I think just the possibilities are so just endless with ceramics. The ways you can use different ceramic materials in combinations and in different states of dryness or wetness. And I think that continuous exploration of materials is something that really keeps me interested and brings me back to working ceramics. The good thing about painting is the instant feeling of putting color on, and that's the color you're going to get. Ceramics is always this delay in putting material on, and then in your mind's eye you are thinking about the color you're going to get, but you only know later on when it's been fired. And I don't get frustrated by that, but when I do paint, I do like the immediacy of instant color.
Mm-hmm. It is certainly true with ceramics that there's a long period of time between the idea and the end product. Typically, you've got to not only make your clay or use the clay, then you have to let it dry, then you have to bisque it typically, or fire it once and then fire it again. And so depending on the materials, as you've said, it sometimes what comes out of the kiln can be a bit of a surprise.
Yes, and I think there's always it's always quite enjoyable, really, that bit of not knowing completely what's going to happen. I think I've got a very good idea about what my materials are going to do, but when they're in combination and when they're layered on top of each other, you only really know what you've got when you open the kiln and take the work out and then examine it and look at it and live with it for a while. And so, it, yeah, it's unlike painting in that respect. But the other thing about the other reason I prefer making ceramics is it's the 3D quality of it as well. It's not just making marks on a flat surface. It's making marks in combination with 3D forms, which literally adds another dimension. It's thinking about how lines go around something and round edges and how shapes can sort of jut out of a form. Even just talking about it, I you can feel your mind buzzing with that sort of visual excitement that you can get in ceramics and making 3D forms and painted marks together.
Yeah. Can you tell us a bit more about that? That's pretty interesting about how you think about, and I could feel your excitement here as we're talking about it. Can you tell us a little bit about how you think about lines and shapes and so on going around the 3D piece, the vessel?
How I think about it. that's quite tricky, actually. I think it's very immediate, actually. It's partly spontaneous approach, but there's also some planning. So I do draw in sketchbooks, and I think a little bit about what I'm making before I make it. But then as the ceramic piece evolves, it becomes something different to the little plan that you had, the initial seed that was in the sketchbook. It sort of grows into its own thing. Mm-hmm. And I just think when you're building this form in front of you, that you've got I just enjoy turning it around and seeing how marks go around the from one side to the other and the steps that you get in the rim and how one color can be up close to another one. It's just a real enjoyment of the actual doing of it. That's the moment I really like, is being in the studio and putting marks and textures onto clay.
It's very spontaneous for you. It sounds like that you do some sketches and some thinking about what it might look like. But then when you've got the brush in your hand, that's when the sketch kind of disappears a little bit and the piece emerges out of the clay and the work.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. I'm building this piece of work and something might just suggest itself as I'm making or as I'm thinking about color, and then I can just visualize something in my head and I think, oh yeah, I'm going to do that, and I get excited about, I'm going to make a brush mark, or I'm going to use these. I just suddenly get this realization that these two colors might work well together. There's a lot of time in the studio where if someone saw me making my work, I'd be standing there doing nothing, it looks like, but all the time you're trying to visualize in your brain. You're thinking about, what's it going to look like if I do this? What's it going to look like if I do that? What will that color with this texture look like? And I think that sort of creative thinking is really enjoyable. I love that. And there's a lot of time spent doing that. I often say that the actual doing of something can be done very quick. And some of the marks are a second to make a mark, but it might have taken me 10 minutes to think about it, about the gesture that I'd use to make that mark, or the tool I would use, or where a point might end and finish. But the actual doing of it can be very, very quick. But there's a lot of time sort of plan. It's not just planning. It's sort of almost practicing that gesture in your mind before you actually do it.
Yeah. It's almost as if you visualize it on the piece before you make the mark. And,
yeah.
And you could do that in multiple different ways until in your mind you settle on something that you feel comfortable with, and then you make the mark.
Yeah. And sometimes unconsciously I find myself practicing as if I had a brush in my hand, and I'll sort of go up to the piece of work and make a mark as if I was doing it. Almost like a practice run to think, oh yeah, it would feel like that if I did that, or it would feel like that if I pushed a bit of texture in there.
Yeah. It's interesting as you talk, my question earlier was, how do you think about things? And really you're thinking in terms of emotional reactions to your work, it sounds like. Mm. right? You're wondering how you might feel when you move your hand in a certain way, or how something might pop out visually for you.
Yes. Yeah. And that gives you a bit of excitement. And that, I think that if when you feel that excitement, you think you must be going down the right track. I think if it gives you that buzz, then I think I'm doing it right. Having said that, it doesn't always, you know, I always think it's important to try and get across that there's a lot of failures in the studio as well. And not everything is a success. And not every time that I go to the studio, am I able to do what I want to do. And sometimes I'll spend half an hour in there, and I think it's just not happening today. And I just sort of have to leave it. And then, you know, on another day, the time will just pass without me sort of realizing. And I think, oh yeah, that's good. I've had a good day. It's a complete mess. I've got everything out, but amongst that, there are some pieces of work that I think, yeah, these are okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I really resonate with what you're saying, because I think over the years, I've learned to trust myself so that when I'm down in the studio and it's not working, I can let it go. I think in the past, I would have tried to stick it out and stay there when it wasn't working. It sounds like you're the same.
Yeah, I think that's very true. You do trust yourself. And I think I always go to the studio with the hope that I can still do it. And I suppose if I can't, then... yeah, I know that maybe the next day it'll be okay again.
Yeah, for sure. But I think also it sounds like that from your perspective, it really is important to understand the technical pieces behind what you're doing so that you're able to have that freedom. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it's about understanding materials and what you can do with them and how they behave. I think I rely on that more than I realized. I do realize it now, but maybe in the past when I was young, I think I didn't know I was relying on that knowledge. And the more you make your work, the more you're working with these materials, the more you realize their potential, how they're going to behave, what you can do with them. So yes, it's an understanding of the materials allows you to do. Allows you to push the sort of boundaries of creativity, I suppose.
Yeah, for sure. Because if you don't know your technical piece, you don't know the materials as you're talking about, then your ultimate vision may or may not turn out if you're not using them correctly.
Absolutely, definitely. And particularly with ceramics, because as we were just talking about, you've got that delay in finding out whether it's worked. If you do something on a painting, you can see pretty instantly whether that's worked or not. But in ceramics, you can invest a lot of time going down the wrong route, I suppose, and then you find out once the work's been fired that it didn't do what you wanted.
Yeah, I'm interested in how people practice often. You know, you were talking about instantly kind of practicing a gesture that you're or a mark you were going to make on it. And I know lots of people in the studio keep pretty meticulous records about using this particular slip or glaze or combination. Do you do that? Are you a person who tracks that kind of stuff?
No, I don't. Not at all. I think that's, I find it quite off-putting, really, that delay that you can have when you start recording and weighing out and measuring. But I think I do have that record, but it's in all of the work that I've made. So for me, it's quite important to have pieces of work around the studio, and they themselves remind me about, you know, what happens when I use these two materials together, or this slip and this ongo, or that clay body and that slip or whatever. So that record is in my work.
So you keep a record. Keep a record. You just don't write it down.
Yeah, it's just all around me, that record. Yeah. I often refer to pieces of old work for maybe ideas. So you're sort of progressing an idea from a piece of work from the past, sort of into something new, And so this, I think one of, when people ask, you know, what are your main influences? I've got lots of different influences, but actually older pieces of work are an important influence as well. There's often something I feel I can pick up on and develop further by having the reference of old work around.
Very cool. Very cool. So what is inspiring you today? What's exciting you? What's getting you out of bed in the morning with respect to clay?
Gosh, a nice warm sunny day, actually. That's going to work in the studio when the weather's quite nice, because we're sort of going through winter now, and I'm really looking forward to sort of lighter days. But I think that I always talk about the landscape and where I live being important to the, is an important influence on my work. And this is again it's something with age that you realize that it always has been. Even when I was a student, I didn't realize I was doing it, but I was making work then that was influenced by my surroundings and my landscape that I was living in London when I was a student. And then I went to Portsmouth, a city on the south coast of England, which is a sort of naval city. And I was influenced by all the maritime buildings that were around. Then I moved to the Midlands in England and really enjoyed coming to Cornwall, which is where I live now. And Cornwall is just a very beautiful place. But it's got this sort of sense of human history within it. You can see where sort of marks that are made in the landscape by people that lived here thousands of years ago, and you can still see that. And I love that sort of connection that mankind has got, humankind has got to the landscape. That's very evident in Cornwall. So the landscape, my surroundings, and knowing my place in my surroundings is really important to my ceramic work. I love just going out and walking or running and even just driving. I drove to the shop this morning and was quite looking forward to the trip because there's a road closed, there was a diversion, so I had to go a different way. And I thought it'd be quite exciting just to drive down that lane because you see the fields from a different angle and you see different things in the fields, different colours in the fields.
Yeah.
So it's that just being in the landscape is my biggest influence.
Yeah, I can see that in your work. And when people hear this podcast and go to find you on Instagram or on your website, they'll certainly see what you're talking about with respect to this notion of landscape, because it's really true. Now, you've got some really interesting pieces. The work that you use has lots of edges on it, I might say, or different pieces that are moved together. Can you talk about the experience you have in applying color and surface decoration and yet listening to the form of the piece? How do you balance that out?
Well, I've been aware for quite a while that I don't want to be making 3D forms that I then decorate. And the word, the term decorate is one, I don't like that word. I shan't use it again. because I feel that the form and the surface should be one. And I'm always trying to find ways of integrating mark making and form together. So often you talk about edges, I'll cut pieces out of a form and maybe stick another piece back in, and that piece that I stick in becomes a shape on the surface, but it's also it also interrupts the form in some way. So it sort of combines very closely form and surface together. And I think ceramics is quite unique in many ways, that it is about form and surface. Painting's about surface generally. Sculpture is often about form. Ceramics combines the two together. But I think it is important to combine the two together, and I don't think they should be separate. I don't think we should be looking at sort of beautiful forms with interesting decoration. I think I want them to be like really locked together. I want them to be the same thing.
So the people are not noticing the decoration. They're noticing the whole thing as a combined unit.
Yes. Yeah. Often I'll sort of cut a piece in half, and one half might be one color and one half might be another color. So there's that sort of interruption that's made into the form by cutting it. But it also becomes this sort of part of the surface because you've got these two different halves working together. Mm-hmm. And then the idea of that is, again, when I was talking about sketchbooks, I really enjoy doing collage work in my sketchbook, finding bits of paper, going through the recycling box and tearing up bits of card and newspaper and sticking them together in my sketchbook. It almost feels like I'm building with slabs of clay. Mm-hmm. And these different sort of shapes and textures, and combining them together in quite a playful way that might then go and suggest a 3D piece of work.
Very cool. What kind of color application do you use? Are you using slips or underglazes? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think what I always say is I always call it a mixed media approach, because I'm using slip that I mix up, but also slip that I may make out of clay bodies. If there's a clay body that I like, then I can turn it into a slip and use that on the surface. I use on-gobe a lot as well, and a lot of people ask me what is an on-gobe, but it's very similar to a slip. It's just not quite as dry as a slip. I use underglaze colors. I use pastels and underglaze pencils, and I use glazes that are normally fired to cone one, but I also have a glaze that I fire to a much lower temperature as well. So it really is quite a mixed media approach. But that sort of comes back to we were talking about, like, knowing your materials. Mm-hmm. You know, I like the knowledge of what that range of materials, what you can achieve with that range of materials at different temperatures. Mm-hmm. And I always, when I'm doing workshops, I always talk to students about not just what the material is that you're using. Supposing we're talking about an on-gobe, I use this basic white on-gobe quite a lot. It's not just the material that's important. It's important to think about how you apply that onto the surface. So the obvious thing to do is to get a brush and put it on. And I do a lot of that. But then you can think about what type of brush. And then you can think about what consistency is the on-gobe. What about if it's very, very watery? But then what about if it's very, very thick? What about if you let it dry out and then mash it into a powder and sort of put it on with your hand? What about if you fire a little bit first and then grind it up and then embed it into the surface? So it's not just a matter of what are the materials. It's about how creative can you be in thinking about how you put that material onto the surface of a piece of clay.
The experimental life of Craig Underhill.
Yeah. And that's the bit. That's when I'm in the studio, that's when I've had a good day, because I feel I've not just made my work, but I've been a bit experimental as well.
Yeah. I see a big smile on your face when you're talking about that. So to me, yeah, that's really something that you would encourage your students to do. And you do yourself on a regular basis.
Yes. Yeah. I think it's, I often get asked, what materials do you use? I always think it doesn't matter what materials I use. That's not the important question. It's how do you put them on the surface that matters.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And of course, there's a million different ways to do that, isn't there?
Yeah. Yeah. And you can, flick it, throw it, pour it, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny when you go to your ceramics class first. I remember the first one I took, I thought all you did was dip your piece. But now, of course, I realize, like you, you can do it in a myriad of different ways.
Yeah. And I often, when I meet students, and they quite often say, they seem to come with ideas that there are rules about how you use a slip or an on-gobe. And I think in ceramics, there does seem to be rules that have been set somewhere along the line that I think you have to sort of question that. You should only have rules where they're needed. I think those, you know, where there are rules, they need to be challenged. Yeah, why can't I put slip on a biscuit fired pot? Try it, you know, see what happens.
Yeah, for sure. I suppose the rules maybe came out of functional wear, where there are some rules about safety of pieces. But then once you're beyond that, or when you're doing sculptural work like you are, or non-functional work, then the rules kind of go out the window.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yes, I suppose when you needed a pot to function and it had to be waterproof and then maybe you do need rules. Yeah.
You need a few then, absolutely. Do you have any particular color combinations that you like, that you work with?
I get excited about thinking about combinations. That varies. That's quite changeable. I kept seeing pink and green together in the environment, and it was sort of springtime here, and for some reason those two colors were sort of growing or could be seen at the same time, and I was quite excited about that pink and green combination at one time, and then there was another occasion a few years ago where I was walking by a harbour, and there was this yellow rusty boat, and some of the colours in that yellow rusty boat were just amazing, because you had the orangey colours from the rusty iron, but it was painted yellow, and that sort of depth of different yellows. But as well as that, there was a little red plaque on the side of a boat, so you had all these rich yellows and then this little spark of red, and I think that visually it was really exciting. So then, you know, red and yellow were a thing for me, so it's almost like I see things in the landscape and then it's almost like then you have permission to go and use it because you've sort of seen it somewhere.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that notion of being excited about color or surface is really, really important for you and your work.
I do get a buzz from it. You can't really explain what that is, but it is quite exciting. I think color is exciting. It does give you a buzz, or a lot of people. And as I say, when I'm in the studio visualizing, sometimes I'll be thinking of this pot's going to be yellow, it's going to be yellow. And then I just visualize this little bit of pink up there. I go, it's like your brain buzzes, because you've just put this, you've just seen in your mind's eye yellow and then that bit of pink, and you think, wow, that's exciting, and then you do it.
yeah, absolutely. So if you could think about a person, I don't know at what stage of their career, somebody's wanting to make a change, or maybe somebody new to ceramics, what kind of advice would you give them about how to move forward in the best way?
I suppose it depends what your goal is, whether you're trying to do it to become a sort of professional, or you're doing it because you enjoy it. I think maybe that's the important thing, is do it, keep enjoying it. Make sure you're keeping enjoying it. I think that when I left university, I suddenly had this sort of dilemma that I thought, I've got to earn some money from making ceramics. So me and Emma, my partner, we rented a little studio, and we started making throw and slipware, and we had very sort of limited success selling it. At the same time, I managed to get a bit of work teaching, and that, you know, financially that helped, and it meant that I was free to kind of do what I wanted in the studio, and I started making my own work rather than work that I thought I could sell. And I just had more success with the work that was genuine than I was having with the work that I was sort of trying to make to fulfill a market that I didn't really know was there. I just sort of, you know, be honest and just make what comes out of you, and people will appreciate that. That's definitely, you know, if you want to get somewhere with your work, make what's in your heart, and people will respond to that.
It's as if there's an energy within the piece that's put into the piece from the maker that is received by the other people viewing it or touching it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's amazing because you can't fool people as well. That will come across whether you're trying to put it across or if you're trying to mask something else, that people will see your work for what it is, if it's a genuine response. And it's just the way that you talk about it and the way you present it. People know whether that's a genuine piece of work that's come out of you. And that's what people want. They want a piece of work that tells them something about how you see the world.
Mm-hmm. Really important. What is it that you're trying to communicate with your work?
Yeah, I think about that, you know, because I could say, well, it's about my experience in the landscape, and I suppose it is, but they're not literal pieces of work. I don't know. It's just some sort of enjoyment about how I see the world. I think, you know, that might sound a bit vague, but I think that's all I've got on that.
But I think that's really true. I mean, think that I'm picking that up when I'm talking with you. It's your joy of making the work that's influenced by the landscape, but really you're sharing your joy with the world.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Yeah. I mean, you could get quite sort of deep about it, and it's a joy of like life and being alive as well, and just you know, thinking about being on this planet, and you know, being aware of everything that's around you. It's about being human, isn't it? About being human and being alive.
Absolutely, and I think that's what people resonate when they. We were talking about energy a second ago, right? And I think that's what people relate to. When they see your work.
Yes, I think that's right. I think because maybe the people that buy my work, you know, they couldn't make maybe a ceramic piece of work that fulfills that excitement that they've got, but maybe they can see it in my work. So they can relate to it. And it's wonderful when people do see my work and they buy it, because it's almost like we're communicating on some level that you can't have that in a conversation. If I put my work out in front of people come to look at it and they go, oh, I love that, I'm gonna give you my money for that, then you've connected on a real basic but so fundamental sort of level. It's really quite something. It can be quite moving, really, in many ways.
Absolutely. It's quite visceral. I was thinking as you were talking, I don't know why I'm doing this, but I was thinking of my living room and a table I've got in my living room. And I thought, you know, if I have a piece of yours on that table in my living room, I've got a bit of your joy sitting here
with me. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And that's what people have. They take a piece of work and they have it in their life, and therefore they've got a bit of how I see the world, and that helps them how they see the world. It sort of almost maybe confirms something about how they see the world, but they couldn't communicate it in a ceramic object or a piece of visual art, but I could for them. So it says something to them.
What a perfect way to end our conversation here, Craig. That's a great message for, I think, potters and artists, is about making sure that your joy is being put into the piece. That'll help you with selling your pieces. It'll help you with connecting with customers and clients, and help you live the joyful life that you want to live yourself.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. When you're an introvert who enjoys working alone in the shed in their studio, then you know you. But you also need that connection with people, and then you can get that through exhibiting, showing, talking about your work.
Yeah, for sure. You just have to manage it a little differently if you're an introvert versus an extrovert. But for sure, you do need that.
Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely. Hey, thanks so much for being on the podcast here today. I really appreciated you spending the time with us and sharing some of your ideas about your work. And I'm excited to see it in person next time I'm in the UK.
Thanks very much, Bob. It's been nice to talk to you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Color and Ceramics Podcast with Bob Acton and his guests. Please help others find the podcast by subscribing to this podcast wherever you find your podcasts, such as iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, YouTube, or other podcatchers. And don't forget to give us a review. We'll see you next time.